that I got from Minnesota this spring, and I came in the house last week, and it was hot last week. And my wife was sitting in her chair doing the New York Times crossword puzzle, and the pup was on the floor with its head and nose down on the New York Times travel section. And this is a true story. Laying there beside her chair, and I says, "Well, what? You teach it to read now?" And she looks down, my wife's quick, and says, "Well, I think it's looking at the travel section trying to find the cheap rates back to Minneapolis." Oops. My co-authors here, Beth Maracle, did this work as a master's project 3 or 4 years ago. Beth's an extension agent in Adams County in Nebraska now. Bob, of course, our colleague. Miroslav Kapps and Julio Souza were visiting professors here in the past few years. When I started putting this together last week, somebody anonymously sent me this cartoon. I suspect it's one of these graduate students who are probably sitting up front here. And so the professor's going through, drooling along with his equations, and did ask why it's so boring, and then gets sent to the principal's office. So I took this to heart and went back this morning and took most of the equations out of this talk, so hopefully we can get through it pretty easily. Genotype-environment interaction you can define just as a relative change in performance of two genotypes when we measure them in different environments. So they perform relatively different between the two environments. There's a classic study that you often refer to in which there were Hereford cattle that originated in Montana that were measured for production in Montana and Florida. Florida Hereford measured for production in Montana and Florida. And I'm just going to show you just a little summary of the birth weight and weaning weight data. Get all these up here. So both cattle of both originations measured in both of the environments, quite different environments, of course. And we look at the means, and I should have converted these back to pounds, but the Montana cattle that were raised in Montana, 37 kilograms at birth. The Florida cattle in Montana, 35 kilograms at birth, so a 4 pound superiority for the Montana cattle in Montana. In Florida, the Florida cattle exceeded the Montana cattle birth weight by a pound or so. If you look at weaning weight, if you look at weaning weight, it's even more extreme. The Montana cattle raised in Montana, almost 200 kilograms, so about 30 pounds more than what the Florida cattle were when raised in Montana. You put both of them in the Florida environment, the ranking is opposite. The Florida cattle are 35 to 40 pounds heavier than the Montana. Classic genotype by environment interaction. We have artificial insemination these days. We can have progeny of bulls raised in a myriad of environments. Desert Intermountain West, this is cattle in Missouri, subtropical Gulf Coast state. And we may not see the same ranking on genetic merit in animals raised in all of those environments. And really, that's the problem we're attacking with this project. So we may see re-ranking of the genetic merit when we raise these animals in different environments, and the progeny are produced in different environments. And we wanted to attack this using what are called reaction norms. And reaction norms is a way of modeling genotype by environment interaction. A reaction norm is a regression of the measurement of animals, or actually originated in plants, but the measurement of the phenotype of a genotype compared to changes in environment. So if you take a whole set of environments and measure these animals in these different environments, you can basically set up the environments ranked based on the mean level of performance. And then as you measure each of these individuals in those environments, you can run a regression line of the slope performance across the environment. The average performance is just going to be 1. But any differences in that reflect genotype by environment interaction. What plant breeders have done have looked at this in a way of evaluating varieties as to whether they respond well to changes in environment, increased input, or whether they're stable. Do the genotypes measure pretty much the same as you go across all of the environments? So this is graphically what this represents. So we have two different genotypes, and the middle line is just the average of these. So this is the average performance of the environments on the horizontal axis, and then the performance of the individual genotypes in those environments on the vertical axis. So in this case, there's no genotype by environment interaction. It doesn't matter which environment these genotypes perform in, there's the same relative ranking between them. In the case where we have genotype by environment interaction, the average is just a line with a 45 degree slope, the dark black line. Genotype 1 is relatively flat. It doesn't get very much of a boost as the environment improves. So we can think of that as being a stable performance. Genotype 3 responds very readily to environmental improvement, a responder. So if we think of these in terms of stability of performance and what might be desirable for a bull that's producing progeny in multiple environments, you can think of this individual, the black line, as an individual that has pretty constant performance across a variety of environments. So if you're working with let's say that you're able to estimate genetic merit for the stability of performance or for the reaction norm, and you're in a poor environment, this is the individual that might be most desirable for you to use because it has pretty high consistency of performance across the environment. If you're working in a better environment, you'd want an individual that responds better to the environmental enhancement and has a high overall mean. This isn't original to us. There's been work done in particular in Scandinavian countries with dairy cattle looking at kind of a similar approach to this problem. So our purpose in the work is to examine using reaction norms as a way of identifying genotype environment interaction. We use two data sets, one Brazilian Malor, and then a data set from Angus cattle in the U.S. provided by the Angus Association. So our objectives specifically were to determine whether or not there were differences in reaction norms across bulls and whether there's genetic variation for this consistency. So do they differ, and is it something that you can select for? Is it something that you could produce in each of these ones? The Nalor data came from two regions in southern Brazil, photographed some of the Nalor cows. We had performance records on a series of weights from birth to 540 days. The environments that we had included breeder, birth year, and season. The Angus data, performance records on birth weight, weaning weight, and yearling weight. And the environment was herd or ranch. And I'll define that a little bit more closely as we go on. It's fairly important to the work. So we calculated really two sets of means. One is what we define as the mean environment. And the mean environment is the performance of the progeny of all what we call qualifying bulls. And to make it into the data set, these bulls had to meet certain criteria in terms of the number of progeny they had in a herd and how many herds they had progeny. How many herds progeny were measured. So the environmental mean then is the mean performance of the progeny of all of the bulls that qualified in that particular environment. The progeny mean then is the mean performance of the progeny of a particular bull within a specific environment. So it's one of those points on the graph. So for a sire to be included, it had to have a total of at least 100 progeny. There had to be at least six progeny measured in each environment. And a bull had to have at least 6 progeny in 5 environments. So it had to have at least 6 progeny in 5 different herds. For an environment to be concluded, so essentially for a herd to contribute data to this, it had to have measurements on at least 6 sires that contributed, that actually qualified. So these again are just the Angus records. We started out with about 250,000 records. By the time we culled through to make sure that they had enough progeny in each of these environments and enough bulls in each of the herds, we were left with not quite 200 sires, a few less for yearling weight, 70,000 or so total records, and about 300 herds for birth and weaning weight, about 200 for yearling weight. So we lost about 3/4 of the data because either there weren't enough herds or weren't enough bulls present within a herd or enough calves from the specific bulls. The things that we looked at then were heritabilities, in particular for the reaction norms, also estimated heritabilities for the traits themselves. We did that using a random regression model in ASREML. It's about as close to an equation as I'm going to show you. Standard fixed effects and then the regression of the weights on the environmental mean within a sire. And again, what we were looking at then is whether within this data set are there, if we graph these out, are there differences, significant differences between bulls for the slopes of these lines? The height of the line is basically just the ETD for the trait. So the slope of the line is the reaction norm. And then secondly, is there genetic variation for those slopes? So could we estimate an ETD for it? Is it possible to do selection on them? These are just some of the phenotypic means of the... some of the students were asking me about averages of averages. That's what these are. These are the averages of the progeny average and the environmental averages. Then each of those you'd expect to be similar. Some of the interesting thing here probably from these graphs is how much variation there is in the progeny mean. So these would be means of a, or these would be the range of means of at least 6 calves produced in an environment for a bull. So for weaning weight, well more than a 2-to-1 ratio of the highest mean weaning weight to the lowest. The environmental averages don't range quite so much because there are at least 6 bulls in each one of those, and a lot more calves. So quite a bit of range in those. All right, so to get to the meat of the heritabilities, the top line here is just the standard heritability of the trait, and they're about what you would expect to see. Yearling weight might be a little low, but birth weight of heritability of 0.4, weaning weight around 0.3, and yearling weight just a little bit below that. And then this is the thing that that we're particularly interested in. What are the heritabilities of the slope of this stability of performance? And this was something that we didn't really know, and I don't know that I've ever seen a heritability estimated for this specifically, so for the birth weight, a little bit higher than the other traits, but a modest heritability for each of those, which indicates that probably you could produce an ETD for these and make possible some progress in selection. Now, we graph these reaction norms, and the graphs are perhaps a little bit misleading because these are the environmental values across the horizontal axis for birth weight. We made all of the lines the same length for each bull. In actuality, that wouldn't be true because not every bull would produce progeny in every environment. But the important thing to look at in this graph is what are the range and slopes of these lines. So there's a light blue one that starts right up here and ends up right down there that's actually negative. So that indicates that there's really not much change in birth weight of the calves produced by that bull, even as the herd average increased quite a bit in the herds that bull produced calves in. There are other bowls that have quite a high responsiveness. This change is an average. I think the steepest slope is about 1.75. The average slope, by definition, is equal to 1. So quite a bit of variation, highly significant differences among bulls for this trait. So whatever the cause of that is, there are at least differences in how consistent the performance is with these calves across environments. For weaning weights, look somewhat similar. The lines, there are not any lines that are quite as flat as some of the ones we saw for birth weight. The shallowest slope is about 0.2, I think, and the steepest slope somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.5. Not quite as much variation as what we saw for birth weight. And for yearling weight, they are flatter, yes. Only a range of about 0.8 to about 1.4 in this data set. I'm not sure what causes the differences between the traits. That's something that I have not figured out. These are the graphs of the distributions of breeding values for traits. So we estimated breeding values for each of the 200 or so bulls for the reaction norm. So we made use of the genetic variation for the slopes of those lines. Most of the values fall pretty close to zero. If you're looking for consistency of performance, you want a negative value here. Negative values where there are 20 or so bulls present are about negative 0.03. Positive values would be a responsive animal. Those go up to about 0.02. Again, for birth weight, nice normal distribution of those. This one looks similar for weaning weight. A little bit more variability. This is down to about negative 0.05 up to 0.06 in this range, so a few bulls there. Again, this is not in pounds. This is in the terms of the slope of that line. So a small breeding value still is pretty meaningful in this case. And the same thing then for yearling. And pretty similar effects. A few bulls that are one at least out here quite a bit in an extreme and a negative 0.1. Most of them stick around zero. So, what are our conclusions? One is that indeed there are differences in this consistency of performance as you go from one bull to another. That seems pretty clear. That all of the data that I showed you was from the Angus data set. I didn't show you any of the Millore values, but they were basically the same effects. So there are differences in the reaction norms. The reaction norms are heritable. The heritability wasn't high, 0.15 to 0.3 for the different traits, but it indicates that at least there's an opportunity to estimate genetic merit for this trait. So why do these differences exist? And this is question that we kicked around a lot in the department. Maybe there are genes for robustness to environmental effects. The heritability suggests that there is something going on there. We know from previous work that differences in heterozygosity affect the consistency of performance. We did mouse studies a number of years ago in which we had different levels of heterosis, expected heterosis, 0, 50, and 100% possible, and looked at these stability parameters, reaction norms in those, and found that as heterozygosity increased, the consistency of performance across environments decreased. Basically, the lines were flatter for high heterosis than lower. So that doesn't explain the heritability, but it may partially explain the differences in the values between bulls. There may be a factor in which if you have a bull with low genetic merit, it can't respond very well to a high environment. If that's the case, that may cause the line to be relatively flat. It may not be able to produce heavy calves even in a very good environment. And there's some possibility that you have genetic merit compounded with environmental effects, and that can cause some of the differences in slopes, although I don't think it can explain fully the differences in these. So those are basically the thoughts that we have had in describing this. I want to thank the Angus Association and Brophy from Brazil for providing the data, and happy to answer any questions or hear your thoughts with respect to this data. Certainly, if we had data from northern Brazil, it would spread out that environmental horizontal axis. So it gives you more opportunity to see differences produced. And the two regions in Brazil that we had were in relatively close proximity. We did still see fairly substantial differences. Part of that is just even within a region, you're going to have herd variation that caused environmental variation, the way we measured that. Scott? I don't know the answer to that. Sure. Well, the ones that have the greatest ones that have the flattest slopes are those that are most robust. Right. Yep, that's correct. I don't think that's the case. I think it's the way that we're measuring these that there is less, maybe less differences in how those bulls respond to environment for yearling weight than there is for weaning weight and birth weight. And that may be related to the fact that environments are not quite as different for measuring yearling weight than what they are for birth weight and weaning weight. Right. Yeah, we don't have the maternal components playing a role in yearling weight, and we do in the birth weight mean. Of course, what you'd ideally like to have is one that is high on the graph and flat, so it's high at every environment. So as you look at those graphs, that is actually reflected in there. So the differences in the height is shown, which is basically the EPD for the trait, and then the slope is the consistency of performance across environments. So most of those crossed in more or less at the same point. There were some that were flat, a little higher than others. In general, what we didn't see is the animal that you'd exactly like to have, which is the one that's high and flat all the way across. If they were flat, they tended to be a little lower down. And that may indicate that there is something to the fact that perhaps a lot of the bulls that are flat don't have the capability of producing really high-performing high-performing calves in a very good environment. Why do you think that is, Scott? Yeah, there was one that was above average that was pretty flat. There are some others that were kind of mixed into all the mess there that were also fairly flat. But clearly that was the one that I pointed out specifically. If you're in a poor environment, that was probably a good bull to use because it had high performance in the very poorest environment. And say, you're correct. That's right. None were way down in the better environment. That this is an alternative approach to that. So you're looking at animals that would perform consistently across environments versus ones of where you did have ETBs in different environments. You can tell me more than I can tell you about how big those differences are as you take progeny and measure them or produce them in different environments. Certainly from an experimental standpoint, we see some pretty big differences. I have not. One of the things we would like to follow up on is looking at some specific environments, so and taking. We did not specifically identify the environment that these were in. So the environment was simply defined as the mean performance of all of the individuals who were measured in that. So that's how we did it. So we didn't. What I would like to follow up on this, what I would like to do is to specifically identify environments to see how these things work in those specifically different environments. That was the excellent follow up. And I really don't necessarily know. And, you know, there are different types of harsh environments, too. So you expect, I think, different animals to perform well or not in those specific environments. They were just different herds. And so they weren't necessarily in different parts of the country. The only requirement was that each bull had to have calves in six different qualifying herds. Just to make sure that we had some spread. So the plant breeders will evaluate varieties across a series of experimentation plots in different regions. And the way they use it is different depending on what the crop is. So for a crop like popcorn, it's very critical that the quality is the same. They want a very stable variety, and that really makes more of a difference than the performance of that variety. In general, they will describe how the variety responds. So if you have, say you're raising alfalfa and have an opportunity to provide good input, irrigate, and so on, you'll want a responsive variety because typically that will give you higher levels of performance. But it's more of a descriptive thing, I think. So. Right, so if you had, say you did have an EPD for these, you would have EPDs for the different, for the responsiveness of the different traits. And just like you select for low birth weight and high weaning weight, you might select for low responsiveness in birth weight, high responsiveness in weaning. What other questions can I answer or not? And that's part of what that heritability estimate looks at. That would indicate the likeness between the parent and progeny for that. So higher for birth weight than for the traits at later ages. But that's what that really would get at. Yeah.